Hey friends, thanks for tuning in to the Church Planner Podcast. Before we started today, wanted to tell you about a really special opportunity our friends at the Micro Church Conference put on by Brave Future, happening April 18th through the 20th in Kansas City. This is for all of you who are wondering what is a new kind of paradigm for missional church planting and church multiplication through smaller expressions of church, what they call rediscovering the smaller way. It's happening April 18th through the 20th. Kansas City is being hosted by Kansas City Underground. Going to be a great weekend. And they've given us four free registrations to give away. Normally the price is $90, but we will get you into the conference for free. We have four of those. What you can do to enter is go on our Instagram at Church Planter Podcast. And there you'll find a DM button. Click that DM button. Send us a DM with your email on it and your name and where you serve. So email, name, where you serve, and you'll be entered to win one of four Micro Church Conference registrations. You just get yourself to Kansas City, and you can be there and learn a ton from our friends at Brave Futures. Hope you enjoy the show today.
God, that's a new tool.
The illustrious Jabba bids you welcome.
I'm going to regret this.
I'm Pete Mitchell. He's Peyton Jones. And this is the Church Planner Podcast, brought to you by Church Planner Magazine.
Welcome to the Church Planner Podcast. I'm your host, Pete Mitchell, along with Peyton Jones.
Pete Jones, the host for all serious church planners. Sit back and relax. Let Peyton and Pete soothe you as you move towards your cosmic journey towards planning the church that you were born to plan. I got a little dramatic for his.
And remember, the love lines will be open for the next half hour.
Oh, why'd you have to go there?
What do you mean, why did I have to go there? Why didn't I start there?
It was kind of like, you know, like those hypnotic tapes. Was it hypnosis? You are a calm, confident, capable church planner. Play this podcast over and over while you sleep.
I love you, man.
So, welcome, Church Planner. And if this is your first time here, well, good for you.
We're sorry.
You're not winning any awards for showing up for a podcast. You know, just finish off your drive to work and in peace. But
you know what's cool about that, Pete, is that most church planners are used to abuse, so they're used to this kind of. You know, I think I would like that kind of disrespect.
You know what I'd love is when I'm talking to pastors. And they're like the very first thing they want to say to me, well, I'm not a church planner, but I am bivocational, or I was full time, but now I'm bivocational. Like they understand that being a church planner is like massive amount of work. And they're like, look, I'm not a church planner. Like I got to come in to something that was already established. Like they know right away that being a church planner is a lot more work than what they're doing.
You're right. Well, you know, that's the thing, man. Like, no doubt. Like, it's tiring. I mean, there's times my wife and I look at each other and say, man, let's just ease into something that's already there and rebuild it, you know, revitalization. And to be honest, that is a legit form of church planning. For those of you that are like, oh, no, you know, like that's selling out or whatever. No, man, revitalization is there are dynamics that are similar. But yeah, man, when you have all that stuff, you got your 501c3, you got a bank account, you got insurance, there's a lot of work behind the scenes to set up. A lot.
Wow. So tell me, what happened for you this last week?
You know, this week I am getting ready for my daughter's Dumbo party.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah, man. So I am landscaping like crazy. Funny enough, so, you know, I get these things where, like, it's good I'm married because God has to kind of teach me things sometimes through my wife. So, like, this week, I pull up my car to the house. I'm off. I'm landscaping. I'm doing all this stuff. Put a white picket fence up. Put lights on it. It's pretty cool. Post lights. You ever seen those?
No.
They make your post light up. It's pretty cool.
I don't know.
They're solar. And so anyways, I'm pretty taken with my fence, obviously. But I pull up in front of my house and this, you know, I don't know who it is. It's someone who walks up and down my street. And I think they're trying to be nice. So when their dog takes a dump, they stick it in a bag. But they don't want to walk around with the bag. So they stick it in front of my house. Sometimes they stick it on the porch going into my yard because I got
a
gate.
They do what?
Yeah. They stick the bag like out in front of my house.
Okay. No, this is not someone who's doing something because they think they're nice.
No, no. I think in their twisted mind, they think I'm being responsible. Look, I bagged it up for you and I stuck it here for you to throw away because who wants to walk around with a bag of crap? So yes, you're right. Normal people would look at that and be like, what's wrong with you? So anyways, I pull up, I see the crap bag, I throw it away, I turn around, there's a second one. Now, in fairness, this other one had been there for a couple days and I just happened to like, I was getting something out of my trunk, but it was over on the walking path because my house is right on a train track and people walk from the train track down the street. So I pick that up, I throw it away, I turn around, I see a new one on my driveway. So I'm like, that's it, right? I got my tools out, I got everything. So I go grab a black Sharpie, I grab a piece of paper, I write, do not leave your crap bags out in front of my house. And then I wrote underneath it, if I catch you, you're going to eat it. And I stick the note out, I stick the crap bag
that's,
on it.
That's the spirit of Jesus coming through.
Well, so my wife, you know, she comes home, she goes, I saw your note. And I'm like, yeah, it's funny, huh? But I was angry when I wrote it. She goes, are you really going to make someone eat it? And I said, no. Because, you know, you can imagine like me getting someone in a headlock. What if it's like an old man or an old lady, right? Like, and then I'm like, eat it, you know, kind of like Butch or, you know, who's the big brother on Weird Science? Chet.
Right.
You know, like getting him in a headlock and making him eat it. I told her, no, I'm probably not going to do that. So I go out yesterday and the bottom half of the note is ripped off. And I asked my wife, did you take that off? She goes, yeah, I figured that probably wasn't a good thing to have on there.
That's hilarious. So,
but I did think it might be better if I said, if I catch you, you're going to either carry it or away with you or you'll be wearing it. Because I would throw it at somebody. I would totally open the bag and throw it at somebody.
Dude.
If they refuse to pick it up. That's just, assault though, huh?
But there's a lot of things that are assault, actually. As I'm discovering. Yeah, that's assault. It's at least not assault with the deadly weapon. It's assault with the poopy weapon.
Assault with a gross weapon. But you know, it's funny because I would love to catch a guy.
You know what? And side story. Someone put a great meme on Facebook and they're like, it's a $325 fine if your dog poops in San Francisco and you don't pick it up, but it's free if you poop in San Francisco and don't pick it up.
As a human?
Yeah, because there's like, I don't know if you've seen it, but San Francisco is like littered with human feces all over the city. Like it's one of the nastiest things you can imagine. But yeah, so. Anyway, just thought I'd share that with you.
That's funny, dude.
So don't let your dog do it. You can do it, but not your dog.
Well, that's good to know. You know, I do live on the train tracks. There is a high possibility that a vagrant would come and do that in front of my house. Bad church planning story, but I remember picking up a friend of mine who was living in a building on Pine. It was an off. I don't know if you remember that building off Pine in downtown Long Beach, where people were squatting in. An office building. Do you know the building I'm talking about? Right there on the corner of that high rise off Pine and 2nd Avenue?
Nope.
Well, I went to go pick a guy up and, you know, he was struggling. He had drug issues and what have you. And you know, another success story with Refuge. He came, he got clean, and he's happily married and clean off drugs and going to church and following God. So a success story, but it did come with a price tag. I went to go pick him up and I did not realize my car, I ran over when I parked out in front of this place, because obviously a lot of homeless people lived in it. I ran over human stuff.
Nice. And,
you know, I've been a nurse for a long time. Sorry guys, this is gross, but welcome to the Church Planner Podcast, where we talk smack for a few minutes, but I'm an RN and I am a connoisseur and expert, if you will, on being able to examine feces. I was trained to do so. I can smell it, look at it, touch it, and know what's in it.
Wow.
I can pretty much tell you what disease,
why,
based on the smell. I swear, like, it's one of the things you're trained to do, because you're handling that, and you can tell, oh, this person, you know, needs more of this, or this person, you learn what diseases are associated. And it was obvious it was a hepatitis, and it stank. My car stank. It
okay,
stank
in my car. Dude, seriously, why are we going down this path?
Because this is a church planning.
No,
it is an injury. It is combat.
We are dealing with church planners who are in the middle of Orange County and like Huntington Beach, not in Long Beach. It's a world of difference.
And I had to go to the car wash like immediately, and like did it was on my tires, which meant it was all over my car. It was bad. It was bad.
I am literally sick to my stomach. Like, seriously, knock it off. I went down this path. I'm sorry.
I challenge our church plan.
I'm sorry. Don't you understand? Stop.
No, but I'm just issuing a challenge.
Stop.
Top the story, church planner. So, now that the trauma is done, it was traumatic for me.
You have seen Avengers this weekend?
No, have you?
No, I said, are you? It's Thursday.
Well, it comes out today. I would have thought you'd be there. Like,
oh, no, I'm going to see it tonight. It doesn't come out until tonight.
They're throwing 24-hour showings and double the popcorn, batten down the hatches. 24-hour showings in some theaters.
Yeah, I'm going to the 6 o'clock showing.
Tonight?
Tonight, yeah. I got a front row seat because that was all that was left. It was a front row.
Really?
Yeah, I'm going to be like, ah! I mean, what else?
You know, I'm excited about that. But the problem is I did not see Captain Marvel, and I really wanted to. And I understand she's kind of a key to the whole thing. So I feel kind of stupid if I go to see this and haven't seen Captain Marvel. Is that still in the theaters?
Yeah, that just came out last month. So
yeah, so I'd love to see a doubleheader, like go see Captain Marvel immediately followed by Infinity War. That'd be
rad. Dude, that would be 5 hours worth of movies, and I think that would be a bit much.
Hey man, I can do it, especially because they give you like you buy that giant popcorn and they let you refill it, and I'm telling you, dude, I can down an entire bucket of popcorn by myself, and if I'm pushing it, I could eat about half of the second. That's one of my favorite foods is popcorn.
Yeah, I'm like good with a small. I'm like, that's plenty of popcorn.
Yeah, we went to the movies. We went and saw Blade Runner. Remember that? And
one of the worst movies ever.
Yes. Oh, you didn't like it?
No. Wait. Here, let me reenact Blade Runner for you.
Yeah, that soundtrack was imaginative.
Oh my gosh, that was just such a stupid movie. Like, I've tried to rewatch it when it comes on TV, and I'm like, I can't do this. I mean, I get like through 5 minutes of it. I'm like, this is just horrid.
I actually liked it. I don't know why.
Of course you did. You and I are night and day when it comes to movies. Like, I literally don't know how we became friends. Like, the more I think about it, I'm like, I don't know how this happened. How did it happen? Where did it come from?
It was a miracle.
It was Jesus.
Considering
it
really was Jesus. How much I like cuddling my friends and how little you like cuddling your friends.
No bueno. No bueno.
I mean, all I want every once in a while, P, is just a little cuddle.
Dude, this guy, I don't I don't remember if he was a my Spanish teacher or not. I had many Spanish teachers in college, but he taught Spanish at my college and we're Facebook friends. And I haven't talked to him in probably, 20 years. And all of a sudden he comes on my Facebook page and he's like, I still have a Spanish test for you.
That's like, funny.
He just drops that one in there. And I'm like, no bueno. No bueno.
No bueno.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I tell you. Well, dude, should we hop into today's topic?
Oh, so we're doing the abbreviated Smack Talk. Well, that'll make before we get into Smack Talk, be honest, what'd you think of the picture I stuck up on Facebook of all of our reviews?
Oh my gosh, dude. That was so sneaky. I was laughing my head off the next day telling Andrew about it.
Oh my gosh, dude. Was that not classic?
It was great.
So for everyone who didn't see it, iTunes puts out this page that apparently you can click on, and it shows all your reviews and what people have written up. And so they're all 5-star reviews except for 3. And 2 of them were 2 stars. And so I circled them. I'm like, failed church planner. And then another guy, never launched. And then one guy gave us 4 stars. He's like, best podcast ever. I'm like, well, then why'd you give us 4 stars, you jerk? And I like circle him. I'm like, meant to tap 5 stars. So
that's funny. So he accidentally tapped 4.
No, he didn't accidentally. He's probably one of those guys who's like, well, no one's 5, which means, they give him a 4 because that's really his 5.
Dude, but the failed church planner comment alone was killing me. And the fact you're like, refer to this week's podcast for explanation. Where if you missed it last week, Pete and I, it's kind of a tradition. When a new Star Wars trailer or movie comes out, we will take a break from talking about church planning, as all church planners should, and talk about the Star Wars trailer. Which, I kind of think, Pete, for Marvel, it's almost worth, if we go see this movie this week, that we come back and talk about that.
What do you mean?
I almost think.
I already have tickets. Because
it's our podcast. Huh?
I already have tickets. What do you mean if?
I'm the unknown variable factor.
Drive up here. Come watch it with me.
That's possible. There
you
go. Possible.
There you go.
Would you see it a couple times?
I'm going to have to see it with Luke, so I know I'm going to see it twice.
So you've seen it on your own tonight or with Luke?
On my own tonight.
Oh, interesting. How come you wouldn't just take Luke with you?
One, because it's at 6 o'clock, it's a 3-hour movie that puts him well past his bedtime. So I don't even know if he'd make it.
What time is his bedtime?
About 8:30.
Oh, that's not bad.
No, it's not bad, but also means I don't want to deal with him after his bedtime because there's, dealing with them issues.
No, I got you.
Plus he's got ice skating or, hockey, whatever. His sister's got ice skating.
Oh, dude, is he into hockey?
Are you serious?
Dude, no.
That's his sport.
Oh, that's dude, rad, dude.
Are you kidding
dude.
Me with Jamie?
Oh, well, yeah. It makes sense, but I never made the connection that, she's an ice skating instructor.
Do you want to know how bad it is for me? Like, she knows I hate going to those games. I'm like,
oh, dude,
this is like miserable for me. Why do I have to sit here?
Okay. Other than rugby, though, ice hockey is the coolest sport to watch.
Not when they're 7.
Okay, so my daughter plays field hockey or lacrosse, right? Dude, which I guess is not field hockey. It's lacrosse, right? Don't they have like hockey sticks in field hockey?
How would I know?
She's lacrosse. It's like these little baskets on sticks that they catch a ball with. It's a cool sport, dude. I go to these games. I love going to these games. I mean, every parent's like in rapt attention. And Are the other parents into the game? Are you just a bad parent?
Oh, dude, I'm totally a bad parent. Like, I don't even think that's a question for our listeners. Like,
because I'm telling you, when I go into the zone when I go to Liberty's game, it's like I'm all about that game. I'm like, I know all the kids' names. It's like, get it, Piper, go for that. Come on, blah, blah. Although I'm not the parent that yells. Like, I still think that's lame. Come on, way to go, way to hustle. I'm not going to do that. But I really enjoy the game.
Did you ever see Good Will Hunting?
Yeah.
You remember when they'd go watch the baseball game? It's all the little peewee players, and they're drinking their beers in the stands. Oh, yeah, and they're talking about the kids. Oh, this kid's got an arm, and Wait till next year. That kiddo's really, I mean, that's like, that's their entertainment.
No, no, I don't. What are they? Are they being sarcastic?
No, they're legit.
Wow.
Yeah.
No, you don't remember that?
Oh, that was such
a great movie. I have to go watch that movie again.
Yeah, that was a good one.
I do know that the entire scene where Robin Williams is talking about his wife and her flatulence, I do know that was ad-libbed. But, of course, it was Robin Williams. Like, 90% of what that dude did in films was ad-libbed.
Yeah, I remember in Good Morning Vietnam, they, like, wrote into the script, Robin Williams ad-lib. Robin Williams ad-lib.
Oh, my gosh. Dude, yeah. he absolutely does that with any film he's in. He did it with Aladdin when he played the genie. He did it with Good Morning Vietnam. And the other one is you watch Dead Poets Society. They've literally interviewed Ethan Hawke. I watched an interview with Ethan Hawke, and he was saying every time we did a take, it was completely different what he would say. You know, almost every scene.
I just can't wait to see his next movie.
Too soon? That guy was an absolute genius.
Too soon?
Too soon. Too soon. Too soon. He's much too loved.
Oh, we're not allowed to make jokes like that.
He was actually a believer and towards the end of his life. And that actually really affected me just because – you know, when someone's able to make people laugh, and Robin Williams, he had some foul stuff, but by and large, that guy was so talented. He could just make you laugh almost all of his movies were clean. And, you know, that, by and large, like it wasn't like Andrew Dice Clay or Eddie Murphy. But that dude had serious talent. When you're able to make people laugh like that, that's a God-given thing.
I was watching a clip on Facebook this morning of, I think it was like America's Got Talent. And I don't know if you've seen it, because I guess I don't really watch those type of shows. Pretty much all the reality shows I don't watch. And this kid has a stuttering problem. Like, he used to play baseball and a grounder took a bad hop and hit him. He got a concussion. He went to sleep on it. And now he's got a really bad stutter, like not a minor one. I mean, it's pretty bad. And so he's a comedian. So he's like, he's making fun of himself. And he was absolutely hysterical, like listening to him. And Howard Stern, he's like, do you have a girlfriend? And the guy's like, yeah, I have a girlfriend. You know, she works three jobs so that way I can pursue my comedy. And so he's like, you got to marry that girl. And he goes, yeah, that's what she tells me. It's just like, aww. But he's just like comedy. Like, he's just one joke after the other. And he's like, I really think they should use my voice for GPS. And like, then he gives like an example. He's like, U-turn. Like, it was.
That's funny.
It was. And he's like laughing at himself because he knows how funny it is. And so the judges are like, I think what I enjoyed most is how much you're laughing at your own jokes. And he's like, well, I wrote them.
So, that's, I mean, it was funny.
Just, dude, the kid was just hilarious. It was so funny watching him. I enjoyed it. But what was touching is they did one of those like, you know, behind the scenes, right, where they interview him before he goes on stage and does his thing. And he's like, yeah, when I used to play basketball, he goes, that kid would not have hung out with the guy I am today.
And that's funny.
He goes, I was such a jerk. And so like his like transformation in his own life from going from being this jock who was a jerk to, man, you know, I need to change my ways. I thought that was almost more interesting to his story than anything else.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But
wow.
Anyway.
That's cool, dude. That's cool. You know, there's so many cool things out there. Like, I've been listening to some new podcasts.
Thou shalt have no other podcast before thine.
What's really funny about that is I'm actually doing Through the Word Deuteronomy right now. So, you know, for Chris Langham, those of you that know, he's took the helm of Refuge Long Beach for the team there and team leader. And he's got a ministry called Through the Word, which is 8 minute to 9 minute chapter summaries of each and every chapter of the Bible. And so I'll be taking a lion's share of the Old Testament because they've all covered almost all the New Testament and parts of the Old. But I was like, dude, give me the Old. I love the Old Testament. Like I'll eat that up. So some of you guys, old time listeners, will remember the Leviticus podcast or the Leviticus Through the Word that we did because we used to talk about it. But Deuteronomy, dude, I am absolutely loving that. And that's a big deal, dude, that whole no other gods, idolatry.
Oh, yeah. Like
kind of a that is the major one that God keeps coming back to going, look, I can almost handle it. It's kind of like when you're married and, you know, your spouse, I can handle all of your quirks and all your weird things and all the ways you let me down, but do not cheat on me. You know, it's very much like a marriage when you're reading through it. It's amazing. So speaking of other podcasts that we should not have before Pete, I'm just priming the pump here. I have another podcast in the works. I'm about 5 episodes in recording. It is called Ministry Ninja. I'm just wetting your whistle. Don't blow yet. Don't carry the tune yet because it's not on. It's not on iTunes yet, but it will be up there in about a week or so, and I will let you know when it's up. After that, the Through the Word podcast will be.
And I would just like to point out that all of those fuddy-duddies who are like, you guys aren't serious on this podcast like you are on Hardcore. You finally get to have a full half hour of Peyton Jones again without Pete. So go over there and listen to that podcast.
Well, no. I mean, it's the same. Like, we screw around on there, too. Like, of course.
Oh, who's your host? You have another host before me?
Well, I have my wife. And then
it's the two of you?
I have Barry.
Oh, well, we know it's not going to last then.
But the British accent, you know, the British accent.
Dude, it's so funny. Jamie.
No, he's really good on there. I'm only teasing. We pick on Barry nonstop, but he's actually really good on it.
Jamie knows that we'll be watching TV and I'll be like, ah, I can't stand that accent. She's like, what accents do you not like? I go, pretty much all of them. Anybody who's got an accent, I can't stand it. Like, just be quiet. Barry, actually, I don't think he's got a thick accent by any means. Like, he doesn't have an accent to me.
Well, and what's funny about Barry is his accent. Those of you that don't know, he got saved at the church plant, Pillar, and was a part of another church
in Wales.
Rest Bay. Yeah, he was part of another church plant. And then he did his own thing in a coffee shop. But prior to that, he came and interned in Long Beach. And so he's now back at Pillar. He's probably going to launch out with Melissa, who's Ruben's. I mean, this is a whole like incestuous thing. Everybody's connected. But he,
you know, you're not supposed to use that term when you're talking about marriage. I'm just saying.
Metaphorically incestuous, okay. Shall I say.
Much better, much better.
Yeah, still, much better. Sounds,
just stay away from that term at all.
Sounds fine when you say it like that.
Stay away from that term at all when you're talking familial relations. I'm just.
Yes, yes, yeah. indeed. And so what's funny about Barry is the more he was in America, the less Welsh he sounded. But he is in the heart of Welsh speaking Wales. So he. In his community, everybody speaks Welsh as first language. So right now, if you heard him,
that's got to suck for Melissa then.
Well, you know, dude, when you move to Wales, like you fall in love with that culture. You want all of it.
No, it's amazing. I get that, but she doesn't speak Welsh.
Well, everybody's bilingual. So, you know, they're very anglicized and yet well,
I
their
think
language
she can
is
speak
very,
English, I think, right? Because she doesn't speak Spanish.
No. So I lived for 3 years in a collegiate town, the third oldest university in the UK was in the one of the towns I was in. And I was that's where I was a firefighter.
What
and I'd be on the fire truck and all these guys would be speaking Welsh. And you know, after I was a firefighter 3.5 years, I'd say my third year, I was making out most of the conversation. I couldn't speak it fluently, but I could make out a lot of what they said. So
I'm just saying that I think it's tough in the sense that anytime you go to another country, it's tough. Like that's where you're going to be living. But then to go to another country and you don't speak the primary language that everyone else around you is speaking, you kind of feel like you can feel alone. I'm not saying she does. Obviously, I have no idea, but.
Oh, dude, you're dead on.
I'm just saying that's got to be rough.
It is, but if you knew the family that she's like, Barry's family is amazing. I used to work with his dad. With that family, I will guarantee you she became an instant daughter. And the Welsh are so welcoming that you just never met. I tell people they're the Hawaiians of the world. They're hospitable. It's just you're accepted. You're one of them. So it's they're an amazing people. Can't speak highly enough of the Welsh.
Did you just say they're like the Hawaiians?
Yeah, dude. You know how like you go to Hawaii and they're like they come out to the plane and meet you with a lei, and you know, they come in their grass skirts and do the hula dance for you. There's a lot
of pineapple in Wales, because that's enough to get me to go visit.
Well, dude, we should get into our topic.
Great Scott, it's time for this week's topic.
Let's get down to the nitty-gritty.
Okay, so the topic today is what you should do before anything else. And really what we're talking about is the rhythm of prayer, because, you know, I do a lot of church planter training, and we train guys on calling and character and what have you. We don't, you know, and when I say we, this is, I was working with North American Mission Board, and the training was really good, but I often find that when I actually come to church plant, what I do on the ground looks very different than a lot of church planter training. So one of the first things that I've got to do, and this started back when Andrew and I first started planting, I remember we would just go out in a field and we would pray. Mm-hmm. And we'd just be on our walk. We walked a lot, and we would just stop in this field as we're coming back up to our housing tract, and we would, you know, we just stop in the field, and it would be very natural. It wouldn't be like, you know, our Father in heaven, you know, it wasn't like a close your eyes. We just stand there, and we'd just be like, at that point, prayer was very casual to me. I actually wasn't doing that hot with God, but it'd be like, hey, God, seems like you're doing this. Boom, boom, boom. And we'd have that time. And out of that came Andrea's, you know, for me, an infamous statement where she was like, I don't feel safe. We don't have a team around us. And I said, okay, all right, I hear you on that. I think that's good. I didn't really know what I was doing on church planning. I'd been part of church planning team in New Zealand and Hungary. And of course, the church that I developed in was a church plant. The movement I was a part of was a church planting movement. But I didn't really know what I was doing, but that seemed right. And all of that came out of prayer. And so we started having our core team meetings on Sunday nights. This is, you know, things had launched in Starbucks, and we're meeting with these people, and we would just eat a meal. We would throw something down, talk about it. Sometimes a few weeks in, we started going through Titus, and then we would pray and take communion. And that became, you know, really the thing, was praying together with a group of people. I know a lot of people give lip service to prayer all over Facebook, praying for you, praying, you know, texting, praying for you, bro. And don't know if much praying is actually happening when we say that we are. But you've got to establish a rhythm of prayer together, because I, like Andrea, I don't feel safe if I'm not praying. And so right now, getting ready to church plant coming up here. And the very first thing, and this is with Bo and Mary Moffitt, who, you know, are another couple that's linked up with us. We've kind of said, you know, we don't know if, you know, like after training, and I've trained with Bo a million times, I trained Bo. I think sometimes people think they're going to walk in and be like, right, we know exactly what to do, let's go. And I don't feel that. I said my first rodeo, it's not my second rodeo. I feel like, hey, you know, we're actually, I mean, I've been in ministry for decades. And at this point, it's the same. It's like starting all over from ground zero. And, you know, I've said this before, that when every time you plant a church, it's like starting over, just you and the Holy Spirit. And so that's what we're doing right now, is we're meeting once a week, establishing a rhythm of prayer. And that's the start, because whatever else happens, if we're seeking the Lord, then we know we're good. You know, trials are going to hit, unforeseen incidents will happen. But as long as we're praying together, we will be ready for the inevitable. And we'll start to hear from God. God will start to act. Coincidences will happen. Things will start to pop. And that just kind of happens. And so that's the major thing, is your rhythms of prayer. How are you praying together, as a church? And how do you establish those rhythms? For us right now, we're meeting on Wednesdays specifically just to catch up. We throw a topic down, we chat it through, and we pray. And that's what that looks like. So when it comes down to it, it's like Grand Central Station with you.
It's spring break, man. What can I do?
Yeah, that's rad. They're so cute, dude. They're coming in telling Dad goodbye before they leave. So, yeah, so that's it, man. It's that rhythm of prayer. And I would say do that before you do anything else. Don't start outreach if you're not praying. Don't start a bank account. Don't name your church. You literally just need to start praying together. And the rest will come out of your conversations. The rest will come through divine appointments.
Cool.
Any does this trigger anything for you? Does any questions come to mind, or
no?
Oh, Pete Mitchell. So one of the things that has kind of been interesting to me is, and this will kind of frame this a bit and put it into perspective. One of the things that Will Mancini did was he put together a diagram called Church. He's got a book called Church Unique, and he talks about something called your kingdom concept. Now, we've talked about this on the podcast before. The kingdom concept is how your church finds its sweet spot. And what that means is, he asks the question, what can your church plant do, or your church do, better than 10,000 other churches? And in other words, it answers this question: why this people in this place at this time? So why us here? And so the kingdom concept has three circles. Think of like a Venn diagram. And what you do is you find where these three circles overlap, and where they overlap in the middle. If you picture three circles overlapping, there's kind of like a triangle in the middle, an inverted triangle, where all three circles overlap. And he says, wherever these three things overlap, that's your sweet spot. That's your mid. That's what you're supposed to do. And it's just not worked that way for me over the years. And so, especially as I'm coming to plant now, I've been kind of thinking about this, because I've been training guys in this and how to train church planters in this. And it's a helpful tool. Don't get me wrong. Like, for example, like the first circle, he says, what are the five things about your city? What are the gaping needs? So he calls that local predicament. So you might say, oh, homelessness, poverty, crime, whatever. It's the gaping wound of your city. Then the second circle would be what he calls your collective potential. Like, what are the resources we have to meet those needs? What are the, maybe money, time, maybe gifts of the Holy Spirit. I throw gifts of the Holy Spirit in there, because to me, that's a big part of it. And then the third one is what he calls the apostolic esprit. A dumb word for basically, what is your team passionate about? What's the team's passion? So you remember in Refuge Long Beach, Pete, where we had a bunch of artists, we had art students, we had an art instructor, and we had a professional artist. So it seemed pretty obvious that we were going to go reach the art community. Except when I went to the artists and said, hey, on our core team, hey, we want to reach art people. What do you think? And they went, yeah, I mean, we could do that. But I mean, we were kind of thinking the homelessness and poverty were kind of more an issue in Long Beach than the art community. So they didn't have the passion for it. So that would have been a swing and a miss. We would have gone and tried to reach the art, but nobody's heart was really into it. So it wouldn't have been our missional sweet spot. And of course, we found our missional sweet spot. So that tool, I would say, is very helpful. But where this comes into this conversation is, this is what I found. There's a need. You got your first circle. And it's the local predicament, you know, the gaping wounds of the city. Then you have your spiritual gifts. So I don't look at money. I don't look at resources. I look at what are the gifts, the spiritual gifts, which I would say is a more first century approach to it. Because almost everything that the apostles did, you know, at times was done bivocationally, and they made their own money and they, you know, whatever. But then the third circle I call divine opportunity. And the reason why is because when I align the needs with gifts, I know what my mission is just through those two circles. If the spiritual gifts of the majority of us are aligned with one of those needs in that first circle, I know what I'm going to do. But then as I get on mission, there's something that overrides and trumps everything else. And it's where a giant door of opportunity swings wide open and divine opportunity happens. So let's say, you know, I end up going to, you know, someone in our, I'm Refuge Long Beach, case in point, local predicament. We're in Long Beach, we're in a neighborhood that's, you know, got a lot of poverty and homelessness and what have you. There's a Starbucks across the street, and I know that my people, I've trained them evangelistically, and that we can reach lost people because that the gift set that we have as a church in the DNA is such that if you put us around lost people, they're going to get saved. So I say to the team as I'm on my way out, hey guys, let's do something for Christmas. And they go, cool, what should we do? And I'm like, I don't care what you do. I don't know if you remember this. I'm on my way out. I said, I don't care what you do. Just do something. Because I knew, hardwired into it, that at the end of it, no matter what they did, if they did something, the Holy Spirit would meet them in route. Right. Whenever you're doing evangelism, you see this throughout the New Testament, where Paul just puts himself on mission and divine opportunities open up. So I don't think it's something that in a dark room, me and the team can figure out what our missional sweet spot is based on three circles. I think what happens is you align the spiritual gifts in the room to the needs in the city. You get busy on mission, and God might, you know, completely surprise you where a door shuts, he opens a window. So suddenly your whole team gets diverted, just like Paul on mission, multiple times in the New Testament where something unexpected happened, a riot broke out or whatever, and it became a divine opportunity. He gets handcuffed to the Praetorian Guard in Philippians, and he says, but the gospel's gone throughout the whole Praetorian Guard. How else would Paul have ever gotten the gospel into Caesar's household through the Praetorian Guard? How could he ever done that unless a divine opportunity opened up in the form of his arrest? So once you're on mission, God kind of takes over and opens up these kind of side hustles, as it were, you know? And so with Refuge Long Beach, that's exactly what happened with the Christmas story. Was I made one of our ministers and training planners in training go to Starbucks and talk to them about, hey, what are you guys doing for, you know, are you doing any social conscious thing, any charity in the area? Do you want to partner with us? We're going to do this. And Starbucks like, yeah, no, we already have our charity, but if you have one, we'll partner with you and we'll do two. Well, no sooner than that happens, we get in touch with the, and this was a divine opportunity. I mean, this was just someone had a conversation and basically they said, hey, we got a women's children's shelter. And that has resulted in probably 20 to 30 salvations. And now that women and children's shelter spans two churches, Refuge Long Beach and the Garden, because they're a block from the Garden. And they didn't know it. You know, so now all these women are going to church, they're going to two separate churches. And it's been amazing for the women's children's shelter, which was Christian. But not all the ladies there were Christian. It's led to mass conversions. And again, it was a divine opportunity. And it came unexpected. And so this is what I'm saying. Before you do anything else, be on your face before God, asking him to turn up and do the unexpected.
What does it look like when you say be on your face before God? You know,
yeah.
What does that look like leading up to are you talking about leading up to your launch? Or are you talking about?
Yeah. So no, like rhythms of prayer that start before your launch and continue afterwards. And that's a really good question, because what would happen is I would meet with any of the elders. I would meet with him. It didn't matter if it was on the phone. So like with Charlie and I, he and I were on the phone almost every day, but we would pray regularly on the phone. Right. When we would come together as couples, we would do that as a leadership meeting. That was now, usually
when you say
once
couples,
a month.
You don't mean you and Charlie. You mean
no, because for me, our wives were elders, and so that was something that, you know, like if I'm an elder, my wife's an elder, and I think you know that's a whole nother discussion for people. Some people say, well, because it says and their wives and. People be like, well, all the apostles are men. And I'd be like, well, they're also all Jewish too. So you got to kind of apply it in the New Testament, because when Paul comes to his fellow workers in Romans 16, these are Gentiles, they're women. He calls them my fellow workers. So these were women in ministry. So I'm not, you know, I know this isn't that conversation right now, but the one verse in Timothy that people use, you tie that back to Jezebel, where she was, you know, a solo leader. So when he says teaching and having authority over a man, as soon as you go team leadership, you knock that out, that problem out. But that's a whole nother podcast. And we've covered that before. But anyway, so just as a bit of a background, because some people will balk, well, yes, women, he says the wives also, and they also have or the women also, it says. It doesn't actually say wives. It's assumed that this is a couple in ministry together, and they have criteria, not just as an elder's wife, but they are doing the work of elders. In particular, I'm not going to like shepherd females and counsel females and disciple females. My wife's doing that. She's doing everything I'm doing. And those of you that have women's ministries, you're just not calling it what it is. You know, what it is the women are pastoring women. You're just not giving them the honor of the title of what they're actually doing. They're elders to those women. So so our church planner core team had elders and deacons. And so the deacons, a lot of people would be like, oh yeah, women could totally be deacons. But it's because they have this like non-biblical mental, you know, stopgap where I think they've misunderstood, you know, based on that one verse of Timothy, which has a very easy explanation. But going back to that, so we would come together as elders and deacons once a month, and we would pray. There were also times we'd get together as elders to go out to lunch or whatever and chat, and we would talk separate from the deacons. But then as well, you've got to get your people praying. So one of the things that we would do every service is we would have open time. And that was an interactive time with us as a congregation and God. I know worship is that, but it's singing. We want a time where people could pray. But then more importantly, we would also have the rhythm of prayer in our COGs. So every single COG, which is community of grace or a small group, we would have rhythms of prayer where you would have a time of prayer. And it would usually go about 15, 20 minutes with communion as well. So you would show up. If you had food at your COG, you'd eat. If you didn't, you'd kick straight into a Bible study discussion, then you would set aside time for prayer and communion. And so these were the rhythms of prayer that were constantly going. And when I look back to the conversions that happened, I think it was because our people were praying. We were asking God to do what only he could do. And that was to provide those divine opportunities. So that's why I'm saying before you do anything else, right, you pray. And what's the biblical mandate? What's the example for us in the New Testament? Jesus says, wait in Jerusalem, right, for the promise of the Father. And what were they doing for 10 days? They were praying. They were on their face. They're praying to God in that upper room. They've been told to go. They're chomping at the bit. I have the view that the apostles were not scared and hiding after they met with the risen Jesus. There's no indication that they're hiding. They're hiding during those couple days before Jesus rose from the dead because they're scared. But after he raises from the dead, they're ready to go. They're meeting in the upper room to pray, but Jesus has had to tell them, hey, don't go yet. You're not ready. You need the Holy Spirit. You need power from on high. So he's holding them back, right, in the upper room. So they're praying, and that's the thing before the thing, you know, before anything else. And that, by the way, in every great move of God, not just localized small moves of God in your church plant, but every great move of God has started with a return to prayer, a desperation, and you know, to dependence on the Father, for Him to move. And you know, that's what I feel right now in my church.
You know what, here's an interesting question for you. Why do you suppose that is? And I got to be careful how I say this, but
no, I got you.
I've never heard said it was because people started, you know, they were really reading the Bible, right? Like, I'm trying to dismiss the importance of spending time in God's Word.
Yeah.
But it's the prayer part where it's like this sort of stuff starts from.
Yeah.
Why do you suppose that over reading the Bible? Is it because it's our communication to God? I mean,
what? Yeah. Yeah, because when your prayer is like a, you can read the Bible and it can be intellectual and it can, now I don't think it normally is. I think normally when you get into the Bible, it starts creating an appetite for prayer. Hmm. You know, you start like for me, like just doing this through the Word thing, just in all honesty, it has reignited my walk with God in a way. I was just telling Andrea, you know, I was just saying to her, after being out of pastoral ministry, laboring in the Word and doctrine for a few years now, because that's what you're doing. You're prepping sermons. You're constantly in the Word. I'm not there anymore. You know, for the last 3 years, as I'm getting ready, I'll be back in that. But oh my gosh, I told Andrea this through the Word thing has like, I feel like it's just reconnected me with God, because this is who I am. This is who I've always been. This is where I. Because I'm deeply studying. I'm not just reading a chapter in the morning. I'm not just like, I'm doing a deep dive. And I just feel like, I'm like, oh, hey, God, there you are. You know, like I need that kind of intense study to grow. It just, God speaks to me through that. And it's reigniting my, I feel like I'm reacquainted with God in a way I haven't been in a while. And yet, if I just do that and don't pray, prayer is the response of the soul. I would say it's like the breathing, you know, it's the inhaling, and exhaling. It's that two-way communion. It's your connector. Not that the Word's not a connector. It fully is. That's the point I'm making. But when you pray, I think prayer is my best understanding of prayer is a confession of the soul that it needs God, because I can read the Word and not really taking everything before Him and saying, God, I need you. And I really don't think often people pray until they're desperate. We know that in our life.
That's true. Sure. Of course.
I mean, we know that in our life, right? We start praying again when we get desperate about things. And I think prayer is that desperation. And the way I always look at it with revival is the church gets to a point or individuals get to a point where they're so desperate that they're like, God, I just can't do this without you. And in the Bible, you see that, you know, people are desperate. Jacob is desperate. The night he wrestles with the angel, he's about to meet with Esau, you know, on and on. You just see prayer as like a desperation. People pouring out their hearts, confessing, God, I got no hope. Like Daniel's prayer, it's a very Hebrew understanding of prayer. Like we've lost this, but that idea that there was a covenant We're very individual. When we think about our walk with Jesus, it's like me and Jesus, you know, me and him, you know, it's like boyfriend and girlfriend. It's our love relationship. But, and I'm being a little bit sarcastic here, but to a Hebrew, there was a covenant. It wasn't you and Yahweh. It was Yahweh and your people. And so when the nation sinned, you repented on behalf of the nation because God made the covenant with your people, not with you individually. And so when you see Daniel like pouring out, God, we have sinned. He's repented. Here's a guy that's like, he's righteous. There's no one, literally, there's no one on earth like him. Like most righteous man on the face of the earth, the Bible tells us during his time. And yet he's repenting before God because of the broken covenant. And I think that is part of what happens during revival. That same thing kind of happens where people start meeting together for prayer and there's this deep conviction of sin and repentance on behalf of the entire church. And that's what starts to permeate those prayer meetings. And when you start hearing of that, like if you study the history of revival, that's what happens. And God kind of localizes the effect on those individuals. Those are the ones that he's working through. And so prayer is and I think for church planters, we get desperate enough before we plant to where we actually start praying and asking God to do stuff. And, you know, church planting is good for your soul. I mean, it really is. Hmm. So
when you're doing all this praying and stuff, so funny that you know right where I'm going.
It never gets old.
It's so bad, man. So bad.
I don't have them as sponsors of my new podcast, and I'm gonna miss this.
So when you're doing all this praying and stuff, who's helping you out with all the compliance and the bookkeeping and doing your website? Who's doing all that for you?
Oh, Pete, it's Simplify Church because they're like, hey, man, we can't be doing that praying stuff. You know, that's not our gig.
You pray, we simplify.
We'll handle the money.
We should tell Josh, hey, we got you a new slogan. You do the praying, we do the money.
No, it's we don't pray, we do the money. That's... But no, Simplify Church, Pete. They handle all of my bookkeeping and, you know, administrative needs. They'll even give me a virtual assistant. They'll keep me IRS compliant. They'll help me fill out confusing government forms I don't know how to fill out. That's autobiographical. They'll do math for me, Pete.
Wait, you're not a math pastor?
No. In fact, that is their slogan. We exist for the non-math pastor. Yeah, man. They'll help you out.
I love it. SimplifyChurch.com. Head on over there.
Jinx, I was going to say that. Let me say it anyways. SimplifiedChurch.com. Head on over there. Well, guys, this has been Peyton Jones and Pete Mitchell giving you the relaxing, serious Church Planner podcast for today's listener. Reminding you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, our actual tagline. Reminding you, if you want to reach the ones nobody's reaching, you need to go where nobody's going and do what nobody's doing.
I'm not only the heckler president, I'm also a client.
My next book is going to be called I Wish I Had Listened to Pete.
Thanks for joining us for another weekly episode of the Church Planner Podcast with Pete Mitchell and Peyton Jones. We'd love to hear your comments on this episode of the Church Planner Podcast. Visit us online and let us know what you thought at churchplannerpodcast.com. If you subscribe to us via iTunes and have enjoyed the podcast, leave us a positive review. The more positive reviews we receive in iTunes, the more iTunes will promote us to other church planners who would benefit from this show. This podcast is brought to you by the Church Planner Magazine, which is available in the iTunes newsstand or online via churchplannermagazine.com.